saving money on everything for your next project. Now at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes. Whether you're pouring a walkway, concrete slab, or setting a post, we have the right product at the best price to complete your project. Shop our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Oh, goody. I was hoping it was you.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 9, Everything Put Together Falls Apart. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Sarah.
Oh, hello.
Hello, listeners. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's going on at the club. This Thursday, August 6th, we'll be bringing you the July edition of Again With Them. This is, of course, our monthly recap digest of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 90210 OMG, although that's Tori with an asterisk because it is July 21st as we're recording this, and she so far has not shown up at all this whole entire month. It's been a lot of Jenny and Amy and Jenny and a guy who is so forgotten they had to put the name of the character he played in the title of the podcast episode. It's Dr. Jeff from the Clinic, so look forward to that. And then a question mark. Anyway, that's one of the things you can find if you join the club right now.
And as previously announced, this Friday, August 7th, it is Again With This, episode 298. Let's watch Tiffany Thiessen, Willie Garson, and Hal Ojan in White Collar. That's season 3, episode 15, Stealing Home. It's on Disney Plus. I think it's also on Hulu.
And I think it's on Prime as well.
And it stole our hearts, actually. We really liked it. And there's even more Creek and Starverse people in it than I just listed.
Yes.
Come on through again with this podcast.com/club. I don't always pick good ones, but I did this time, and we have fun even when the topic is bad.
Let's get into this episode, starting with our C plot. Pacey's descent into toxic masculinity ensnares Emma. While cleaning the toilet, Emma curses her male roommates. This is where I notice for the first time that the walls of their bathroom are glass, with like muslin covering them. It's an insane decision to add extra fabric to this particular room in
a
home.
To a fecal aerosol site? Yes.
Thank you.
I concur.
Yes. Let that fabric get sodden from humidity and soak up all your toilet smells. Like, however often you're washing that fabric, it's not enough.
Yeah. Also, their toilet is this weird European square affair that looks like it belongs on the TGV in France. And the whole thing just gave me microwave in Jackie Taylor's bedroom vibes. Yeah. Like, whoever converted this space into a quote bathroom really did not think a lot of things through.
No. Anyway, Pacey appears lavishly complimenting Emma. She's in no mood for whatever favor he wants to ask her, which is to let him buy her dress so that he can take her in it to his company's holiday party. When they come back to her, she's like looking at him in horror, holding up the toilet brush, sitting over the toilet. This is where we see Kerr Smith's director credit, which is a very funny choice. And I choose to believe he did it on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Emma immediately refuses Pacey's proposition, predicting that all of his cloddish colleagues will get drunk and stupid, and at least one of them will try to grope her. He offers to pay her $25, but treating her like a cheap sex worker does not help. Here he says he'll clean the bathroom and wash the dishes for 2 weeks. She counters with 6 months. They settle at 2 months. Get it in writing is what I say.
Yep.
When we see them next, they're shopping for Emma's dress at a little boutique, apparently like 3:30 in the afternoon if it's December in Boston, judging by the light. Pacey suggests a dress. Emma rejects it as too granny, and he exhaustedly tells her they've been at it for an hour. Will she just please try something on? She doesn't know why her regular clothes aren't good enough for the party. They're held together with safety pins because she's cultivating a look. Pacey's buying her a dress, so can they get on with it? And he scoops up like six and gives them to her to take to the Fitz, where Pacey has just said he has a little confession about this party. But then Emma comes out in a form-fitting one-shoulder number, and Pacey's so enamored that he forgets whatever else he was going to say, telling her this is the dress, and he doesn't even care that it's $300. And then it's the party, which is happening around everyone's desks, where anyone could trip and dump a whole glass of champagne into a CPU. Like, there are reasons you don't have parties in spaces like this.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason to do it is, I guess, you already had the set, so fine. Pacey anxiously waits alone. Rinaldi brings over his date, Candace, in her very low-cut dress. When Rinaldi needles him, Pacey says his date is on her way, and then Emma's there, the camera panning up to show us how she fringed the hem, cut the dress apart and reassembled it with safety pins, and used a stray bit of fabric as a neckerchief. She finds Pacey and accepts Rinaldi's compliments on the dress because she can't tell he's being sarcastic. Pacey pulls her aside to scold her for doing this to the dress, but she doesn't care and heads for the punch bowl. And later, Emma's enthusing about what she calls the little pickety-blankety things, then tells Pacey he doesn't have to eat the baby corn like a full-size corn cob, big the movie style.
Mm-hmm.
If he did, he wouldn't be so charming and funny, he says, and she guesses he's doing his date material on her. Rinaldi and Candace return, and Rinaldi compliments Emma's dress again. Once again, she accepts. Clip two.
It's just so stylish and unique. What is what you did with all the pins?
Oh, I see. You're taking the piss, aren't you?
I'm sorry?
Taking the piss. Having a laugh at my expense because you think my dress is stupid and you're a small-minded jerk, who's no doubt small in other areas as well.
Emma, do you want to go use the dance floor?
Wow, she dances too. You're practically a member of Fagin's gang, aren't you?
How delightfully condescending of you, Dick.
Rich.
I know. Now, tell me, when you woke up this morning and picked your little outfit, did you think, I want to look like a money-grabbing schmuck with no imagination, or was that just a happy accident?
Well, that's one of life's little mysteries we're just not going to solve tonight, so shall
Keep
we?
Keep your mouth shut, Witter. Your special friend here is doing a splendid job ruining your image all by herself.
You know what? I'm going to go to the loo before I say something Pacey regrets.
Okay, who cares, but...
Yes.
If he passed his Series 7, he doesn't have to put up with Rinaldi's shit anymore and shouldn't, so I have no sympathy for him.
Yes.
Also, sometimes Rinaldi is written as someone who would appreciate this kind of sassing.
Mm-hmm.
Other times he's just this.
Mm-hmm.
In it, either event, no one cares. Please move Pacey on from this period. It is so boring.
It is. And as I said, the last time Rinaldi was in an episode, every time we see them, they're resetting from zero. So, like, there's no indication here that either of them remembers the events of the New Orleans trip, which was two episodes ago. Like,
correct.
Why is Pacey trying with this party? If he is, why does he think Emma is going to make a great impression for him? Like, none of this is congruous with either of their characters.
Yeah, correct.
Before long, we're in the ladies' room. A couple of dates are freshening up, one saying she's got this in the bag. They discuss that punk freak with the accent they think is fake. They're right, but not in canon. And how she mouthed off to Rinaldi. We see that Emma's in a stall listening to the whole thing, and she comes out at the mention of Rinaldi asking why she should be respectful of that wanker. One of the girls asks if she doesn't want to win, and the other explains that the guy who brings the hottest date to the party wins $1,000. Okay. This is reverse dogfight, I guess. I don't understand the point, but...
Yeah. I don't either.
Back in the bullpen, Pacey's moping alone when Rinaldi rolls up, asking where his pseudo-punk friend is so they can go another round. Pacey says she doesn't really want to be there right now and he can't blame her. Rinaldi asks why Pacey's been loading up on empanadas all night then. Pacey says Rinaldi didn't have to go at Emma that hard. She's not going to play down to Rinaldi's outdated stereotype of what Pacey, quoting Rinaldi, I hope, calls the lesser sex. She's the most eloquent and passionate person Pacey has met in a while and has too much grace to lower herself to Rinaldi's playing field. Rinaldi, unsurprisingly, doesn't care. Clip three.
I'm sorry your poignant outburst was wasted on me.
That's not a problem. I've wasted the better part of my evening playing this pathetic game.
If you consider this such a waste of your time, We can remedy that come Monday morning. It's all well and good, this back and forth. What we seem to have forgotten, or what you actually never learned, is that I'm your boss. You're not precious to me. In fact, you're on thin ice. You watch it when you open your mouth up to me, Witter. I'm not your friend. I'm the guy who's in charge of your future, which is currently bleak.
He passed the Series 7. He can quit any time. He should quit. Why are we expected to invest in this plot or this relationship? It's so dumb.
Right. It's not even like they're giving us, oh, Pacey doesn't think he's good enough for anything. He thinks this is the best he deserves, blah, blah, blah. He's getting some kind of like surrogate father connection with Rinaldi. Like, they're not even doing that.
No.
So why any of this?
Yeah. Look, the restaurant was also stupid and not really credible, but it was miles closer to believable and compelling than this.
It feels very, very realistic in retrospect. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Sometime later, Pacey gets home to Emma on the couch in her robe and slip watching TV. He asks what happened to her, as though it isn't obvious she left without seeing any reason to say goodbye. She asks him if she won. Pacey plays dumb for, I'll say, an insultingly long time. After she asks the second time, she guesses she didn't win since there were probably 20 women there who are hotter than she is. He figures out someone told her about the contest and apologizes twice for taking the spineless corporate route and forgetting that he has a choice in participating in these piggish rituals. She says he always has a choice and then asks again if she won, and he shamefully shakes his head. Emma asks if he invited her just to humiliate her. No, he says he thought she would win. She was by far the most beautiful woman in the room. Just being there with her was 10 times the prize he would have gotten from the freaks he works with. He apologizes a fourth time, and they stare at each other's mouths for a while before lunging at each other and furiously making out, only to spring apart at the sound of the door, Jack entering with a late-night burrito and obliviously parking it on the couch between them. God bless the cooler. Good job, maestro.
Yep. And also still in his jacket, like, buddy. Come on.
Yep. On to our B-plot. Natasha gets a new co-star, and Dawson gets jealous. Jealous. The more they show us of Todd's movie, the less I understand what it is even about, because we open here on a full disco scene.
Mm-hmm.
Todd calls cut on the rehearsal. Dawson brings him a coffee and a Danish, food shaming him for the latter. Todd exposits that ever since Dawson made him quit smoking again, he's been eating like crazy. Dawson thinks this isn't nicotine withdrawal, Todd. It's nervous, Todd, and lists some of the other faces of Todd: drunk and belligerent, sober and belligerent, horny and creepy, etc. Dawson adds that it's depressing that even Todd would get nervous about a guy coming to shoot a cameo, forcing Todd to remind him how flustered Dawson got just transferring a call from Steven Spielberg. Apparently, this Max Winter, the cameo artist, could do a lot for this movie in a Janet Leigh in Psycho, Drew Barrymore in Scream kind of way, and they went through hell to book him. And then Max himself is there, played by Eddie Cahill, with so much hair. However much hair you think he has, it's like he's wearing two wigs that have been sewn together. It's insane.
It's like someone put a cone head prosthesis on him and then put a wig on that. Like, yes. it is really a lot, and it looks very Muppety.
It does, but I think it's real hair. Like, I don't think it is a wig. It's just a crazy amount of hair, and as someone with a crazy amount of hair, I sympathize.
Whatever product narrative they went with was absolutely, like, it just made it look like doll hair, and it's amazing. I mean, I love him. I don't care. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. We get this clip 4.
Todd Carr, you freaking genius. I finally get to work with you and I get killed off in the first 15 minutes?
Fear not, me old mucker. We're bringing you back in the sequel as a flesh-eating zombie.
Sounds great, but we got to work around Spielberg.
Indeed. Indeed.
Hi, I'm Max.
Hi. Dawson, Todd's assistant. You really going to work with Spielberg?
Yeah, we finally worked out our schedules for this project. So after we shoot, you guys got to show me where to have some fun around here. What do you say, Dawson?
Sure.
And, as for my co-star,
the lovely Natasha.
Yes, I will definitely need a word with her. I always like to get to know whoever I'm working with.
I don't wanna wait. Well, you're gonna.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, Beak. You've really come so far in our esteem, especially by comparison to a lot of other characters this season, but you're no Cahill, and that's it.
So when we see Dawson next, he's in Natasha's trailer. She freaks out that she's going to act opposite Max Winter. She's going to kiss Max Winter. Dawson's feeble attempts to undermine Max by commenting on how much hair he has, A, doesn't work, and B, is particularly cruel to James Vanderbeek, given the baby chick situation he's got going at the moment. You can see this in the visual aids as well.
Which actually sort of looks cute on him, but like...
It does.
How much hair Cahill has still would not cover the acre of forehead on the beak at that moment. I mean, bless. We all have different gifts.
No, and I try not to use, you know, Zoomer slang because I'm elderly, but like I understand what getting blank mogged means because Vanderbeek is getting hair mogged by Eddie Cahill in this episode. And it's quite something. Then Max himself is knocking at the door, asking to run lines with Natasha, who is so starstruck she can barely manage to everything he says to her. Max sees Dawson getting up. He offers to leave if they're in the middle of something, but Natasha quickly tells Max to sit, and Dawson drifts like 3 feet away to the trailer kitchen to try to find something to do. Natasha and Max have barely started when Max asks Dawson to excuse them because rehearsing makes him feel vulnerable. But... Max remembers Dawson's name and thanks him nicely as Dawson leaves, and then Dawson stands outside the trailer being perturbed. It's like his encounter with the ghost of Melanie whatever from the Halloween episode taught him nothing about jealousy or something. And then we're back on set shooting the disco scene, Max and Natasha in the foreground. They shoot it with the diegetic Get Down Tonight playing, which if Amy Sugarman is listening, they would not do on set. They would add it in post for continuity reasons. FYI. Yeah. Natasha's character, with a huge fake updo, asks if Max's character wants to talk all night or dance. And he says first things first, kissing her. And they end the scene with their little disco moves, which you can also see in the visual aids, until Todd calls cut and comments to Dawson that they have great chemistry. Dawson, who's just chilling at Video Village with Todd, wearing headphones like he's an important member of the creative team when he could be doing something useful like getting Todd another Danish, hesitantly agrees. Todd steps away, still in his headphones. Dawson is about to take his off when... clip five.
That last take was killer, huh?
I was totally in the moment.
Yeah, me too. So your boyfriend probably isn't too happy about me kissing you.
Oh, I don't have a boyfriend.
What about that guy from your trailer? Aren't you too...
Dawson? God, no. He's a PA.
Oh, wow. Natasha.
Gotta hoit.
No, that's no good, Nick.
No, it's rude. Especially after, like, how much she was mad about him dumping her. Like, she wanted to get back together again. Why is she just dismissing him like this? I mean, I guess because he's not famous.
We got a line about it in the previous episode about how it's like they're sneaking around at work. But like, I think everyone knows and there was a pool. So.
Yeah, everyone knows for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stop that. And don't be shitty. Even if no one knows, don't be shitty like that.
Yes. But to your point, Todd has heard that too and can tell from the back of Dawson's little head that he's just had his little heart broken.
Mm-hmm.
Ducking in to distract Dawson by asking him to go get him a coffee. And when we return to the shoot, Max's character has been stabbed and Natasha is leaning over him. Clip six.
I won't let you die.
It's too late for me, baby. Just promise me one thing. Keep on dancing.
No!
And cut!
I mean, bless.
Yeah.
Again, you appreciate that there are people making their own fun.
Totally.
Dawson's Creek staff at this time, and these are among them that was delightful.
I agree. So Todd raps Max and calls for everyone to applaud him on a job done well and ahead of schedule. Clip seven.
You did a fabulous job.
I know.
Right.
Gorgeous.
It's good.
Yeah, love you too, Cahill.
As Max leaves, Natasha remembers Dawson exists. Clip eight.
So aren't you going to say anything about my performance?
Yeah, you're great. You're always great. You're a real actress, Natasha.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Zing.
However, that pointed remark sails right over her head as she says that she knows she and Dawson had plans, but Max asked her out for a drink. Dawson can totally come if he wants. Dawson says Todd wanted to go over the shot list for tomorrow. LOL. And Natasha almost immediately says, that's cool, and maybe she'll come see Dawson afterward, pecking him on the cheek. And at the hotel bar, Dawson and Todd finished their shot list meeting, not something Dawson would be part of, by the way, before Todd asks what Dawson and Natasha are up to tonight. Even though we know he also overheard what Dawson did. Dawson mopes that she's out with Max and Dawson's thinking of ways to kill him. Dawson recaps what we know, adding that he had a chance to confront her about it and didn't. Todd firmly says Dawson's doing what's smart, keeping his shagging privileges for the rest of the shoot instead of causing a fight that will lead Natasha to cut them off. His privileges, not anything else. And when Dawson makes a face, Todd gets even more real. Dawson can't get Natasha her next job, but Max might, and Dawson should just forget about it, which is honestly, like, I mean, it's rude what she did and she was shitty, but true. Like, it has to work her angle. She's coming up.
Yeah. She didn't have to do it like that or do him like that in the conversation, but and Dawson surely understands that and understands that she has to go network.
Yes. So Dawson can't believe, however, that Todd's advice is just to sweep it under the rug, but Todd stands by it. Dawson groans that Natasha has a power over him. Sometimes he looks at her and all he can think about is sex, Todd guesses, and Dawson sheepishly admits it. Clip 9.
And they know that. And that's how they walk all over us.
Technically, isn't it you who does the walking all over in these situations?
Oh, I've been trod upon. Believe you me. Don't even get me started.
Okay, I don't want to know anything else that's going to annoy me. Please. Dawson announces he's going to be direct with Natasha like he's always been with people his whole life. Todd says he can let Todd know how that goes. Dawson can't think about it anymore. So, clip 10.
Barkeep, 2 shots of whiskey.
Coming up.
And bring Dawson whatever he wants.
Todd, everybody.
Wink. Yep. Sometime later, Dawson's making his way back to his hotel room when he sees Natasha and Max up a hallway chatting at her door. She is holding the lapels of Max's coat, but otherwise not really looking that intimate. What is noteworthy about their positioning is Natasha's in skin-tight pants and Bianca Katschlich's butt in profile is unbelievable. Like, it looks insane.
Please report those comments to her ass before they form their own website.
Oh, God.
It looks amazing, you know?
Yeah.
Can't be denied. Dawson ducks back around the corner and then watches Natasha and Max chastely hug goodbye. When Dawson comes back out and walks up the hall, Max gives him a cheerful hey as he passes. Dawson cuts him dead and then turns around like he's going to yell something after him, only to decide against it and just scowl to himself instead. And Dawson's been in his room for about 10 seconds when Natasha knocks. He asks how it was. She claims it was boring. They had one drink and she's been watching TV in her room all night since then, but she was thinking about Dawson the whole time. She starts kissing his neck, and when he doesn't respond, she asks if he's really going to send her back out alone into the cold, cold night. And starts kissing him again, and this time he lets himself be seduced. And I guess we're all supposed to think this is a sign that his Spielberg-y heart is starting to harden from all his grown-up soul crushings or something. Or he's just horny and she's there, and that's also fine.
Yeah, and it's a set romance, and once the movie wraps, so will that.
It's not that serious.
He read The Devil's Candy or whatever that book was. Like, yep. He gets it, maybe.
You'd think. Finally, we have our A-plot. Joey's flirtation with Eddie progresses for the most asinine possible reason.
Oh, God.
At Hell's Kitchen, Joey is annoyingly studying at the bar for her last final, in Hetson's class, of course, and annoyingly complaining that people are being loud and putting grating music on the jukebox in a bar. Eddie, who just got there, says actually he put the song on and Joey's only slightly chastened. He suggests other places she could study, like the library, which she claims is so full of people that some are studying in the bathrooms, which seems unlikely. And the dorm is also out because most people have finished with finals and are throwing parties, which if most people are done, why is the library so full? But
Mm-hmm. Also, if you're done, you left and went to your summer internship. Shut up, Joey. Shut up, show.
Right. Winter internship. But yes, instead of suggesting a coffee shop, 24-hour diner, or the public library, Eddie tells Joey she could study at his place. She makes a typically virginal joke about him trying to get her into his bed, and he says she can get it if she wants. He's working until close. Joey takes his keys and goes tonguing off to his place.
Why?
I don't...
It's so bad.
Yeah, it is. Joey's asleep on the folded down futon when Eddie comes back from his shift. He briefly watches her sleep, of course, and then pulls a blanket over her, and then... beds down on the floor in his jean jacket, I guess, because this is a studio and that's his bed, but he's being a gentleman. That explains why he's on the floor, not why he's in his jacket.
Yeah.
Time passes. Eddie wakes Joey up with coffee well before her exam, since he didn't know what her usual morning routine is. This is when we see he put a blanket on her, but he didn't take off her boots, and she didn't either, but we didn't expect her to. This is what people do on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Joey's so ready for the exam, she's sure she's going to set the curve. Eddie knew she could do it, calling her Tiger, and she kisses him because she kind of liked it, and he must really like her because there's no comment on her morning breath here or at any other point in the scene. He asks whether she snooped, and she pretends she's above that, then admits she did look in the medicine cabinet, and they'll discuss the dandruff shampoo later, which, like, A, that's not much to discuss, and B, people keep shampoo in the shower. She also almost tripped over his skates. He claims he plays hockey, but she knows they were figure skates. Clip 11.
All right, so I may skate a little. You know, I happen to possess a certain masculine grace.
This detail does not track with the rest of his character at all. Like, just no. Say he plays hockey. I believe that he does and that Oliver Hudson does, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't believe any of it, but I guess they had to eat clock. So
sure.
Skating it is.
Anyway, he says he'll have to figure out a way to keep Joey quiet, which is obviously to kiss her until she has to stop him for a speech. He enters, assuming it will be annoying. And he is right. Clip 12.
I'm not the kind of girl who sleeps with a guy after only one date.
Really? Because I usually sleep with girls after only one date, like at least once a week.
No, all I'm saying is that I have a certain pattern when it comes to sex. Long, protracted, tension-filled waiting period, you know, full of dramatic build-up, you know, possibly lasting years.
No, I wasn't, you know, expecting anything here. I don't mind taking it slow.
That's nice. But that's not what I mean. See, I was sort of telling you about my pattern because when I woke up this morning, I reached my arm across the bed, kind of wishing that you hadn't taken the floor last night. And I was lying here just trying to think of one reason not to break my tradition with you right here. I couldn't think of one. You could say something quick right now before I die of embarrassment.
How's that? Is that okay?
That'll do.
That'll do.
Ew.
Get on with it. Yeah, in the middle of this, they cut to like their hands and she's like fidgeting with his fingers. I mean, I put this in the visual aids. It's like, is this a way of showing a Hays Code compliant version of her jerking him off? Because that's all I could think of this close up. Anyway,
I may have lost consciousness due to the baby voice,
the fact
that this foreplay went on for 4 weeks.
Yeah. Also going on about, like, this is my pattern. Like, you've fucked two guys, both of whom you've known since you were a baby. Like, whatever. Anyway, cut to a foreplay scene that did not need to be as long as it is. But I thank whoever cut it that way for taking up time. By the way, Eddie's shirt comes off. Joey's sure doesn't. And long enough post-sex for Joey to have gotten up, put on one of Eddie's thermal shirts, and fallen back to sleep, she wakes up and smiles at Eddie, who holds her hand and tells her how beautiful she looks. That's too bad because she plans on never calling him again. Then can he make her some French toast as a parting gesture? She's into it since her exam's at 9. He got her up at the crack of dawn and it can't be too much later than that. Eddie jokes that she's implying that he did not pay her adequate attention, which she denies, and then picks up his alarm clock and sees it's 11. She immediately blames him for letting her fall asleep, even though this was entirely her responsibility. She does also at least curse herself for sleeping over there instead of going home where there are alarm clocks that she controls. Eddie tries to defend himself and his pro-snuggling policies when she snaps that she has an hour left in her 3-hour exam and she's 20 minutes away from school. Eddie can get her there in 10. By the way, he was until recently in her class and saw her getting there late constantly, all on her own, this entire semester. So it's very gentlemanly of him not to bring that up, because I would have. Cut to Eddie's improbably nice vintage SUV dropping Joey at the building on campus. She leaps out. He tries to call after her, but she's gone. And in the classroom, Joey finds a seat just as the proctor announces they have half an hour left. Later, we see Joey walking through an improbably green yard and knocking on the front door of an improbably gigantic house for one person to live in.
Yeah, who has, we assume, child support payments, possibly alimony, and that would not be his house, even if that were not true.
No.
It's just not his house. That's Gramps' house. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing as Wilder's house first. Like, how do they think professors live who are in their 30s? Because it's not like this.
No, it isn't.
Anyway, one person, as Sarah said, is Hetson, who answers the door pulling a sweater on and gloats that he was hoping it would be her. Joey's sorry to come to his house, but she couldn't find him on campus and needs to talk to him. He understands the situation from the 27 messages she left on his office phone. Clip 13.
Well, I lost track of time and...
Gazing into the abyss of your future again.
Look, let me have a retest.
No.
Look, I was up all night studying. I fell asleep and then I woke up early before sunrise early and then I fell back asleep and I was disoriented. I wasn't even in my own...
Wasn't even in your own what?
I wasn't even in my own room.
Look, it is your responsibility to get to the test on time. And since you couldn't get past question number 1, that's an automatic F, which brings your grade for the semester to a nice... healthy D. So you see, it's not so bad. You still pass. Night, Potter.
Professor Hudson, no matter how you feel about me personally, you can't be this vindictive.
All right, now see, that's where you're wrong. This is not about vindictiveness. This is about rationality. I have to apply the same set of standards to all of my students, or else I'm really not being fair. It's nothing personal. And it's a tough break, kid. I feel for you.
Okay.
Yeah!
Here's the thing.
Fuck you, dude!
You're obviously listening to two people hosting this podcast who never had to ask for an extension for any bullshit reason like this. I assume I never did.
I actually missed my very first university final.
Gasp.
Because unbeknownst to me at the time, I had mononucleosis.
Oh.
And had fainted in the shower, was dragged out by the feet by my roommate, thanks Lisa, and put to bed. And I was like, I could still get there. It's fine. I can't miss my first exam. And she's like, no, we're calling the proctors. They're taking you to the infirmary.
Yeah.
And that's how I learned about the policy at Princeton, which was you get one.
You get one
mulligan like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, shit. I burned it already. God damn it.
That sucks.
Yeah, it was not great. And I had to take that exam in bed while basically napping. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was what it was, but that's why I was like, no, it's fine. I'll just crawl there. And Lisa's like, no, you won't. You tried that. It didn't work. You lost consciousness.
Yeah.
This whole plot, like, if you have a D, that's not going to get you kicked off a scholarship, I don't feel, in sophomore year. Like, take it and run. You fucking hate this guy.
Well, furthermore, this is only the midterm. Like, we're about to see a couple of episodes from now. She's still taking a class from him after the holiday episode, so...
But if the next episode is the Christmas episode, this would be finals for I mean, it wasn't for us.
This is finals, but she is back in his class in the new year.
What?
So this, to me, this would be like, this is the midterm of her class, unless she's taking a second class from him, which, like, why would you?
Yeah, but that makes no sense. Like, what college has like a year long? Oh my God, why do we even care? Let's move on. She got red. She got her beads red. That's what counts.
She did. Where I went, we did have year long classes all the time.
Oh, okay.
Almost all of my English classes were year long classes. So,
oh, wow.
It does happen. I know it's not common in the U.S., but regardless, like, and we'll get to it when we talk about episode 11, spoiler alert, like why this doesn't make any sense. Because either she still has the rest of the year to recover this grade, mm-hmm. or she signed up for another class from this prof, which, like, you never would do. If you had the option to drop it, you would.
No. Having eaten it in similar style with an undeserved C+, Professor Arslef, rest in piss. Like, no.
But yes.
Blackballed. That's it. Just drop the class. He sucks.
I know we're supposed to be against him. He is right. Like, she was not in a medically emergent situation like you. She was not in jail for the hours of her exam. She just, like, fucked up in a totally stupid, irresponsible, banal way, much as she's been fucking up all semester, being late every time we see her. But this is Queen Joey. We're supposed to think she's the victim of a terrible injustice as she sits on the stairs in front of Hetson's house to reel. And Katie Holmes covers her mouth in horror, but cannot actually produce any tears. Like, don't cry there. Leave so that he doesn't look out the window and be like, LOL, look what I did.
Right. Or if you're performatively crying to try to get sympathy from him, first of all, as Tara just alluded to, that won't work.
No.
He'll just point and laugh, possibly within your hearing. But like, summon up some tears or like fall down on the ground. Like, do the job.
At the very least, pull out a nose hair. Good God. Anyway, sometime later.
What are those little eyelashes? That'll do it.
Follow me for more acting tips. Sometime later, Joey mopes into Hell's Kitchen. Behind the bar, Eddie slides her an apron and she mumbles a despondent thanks. Eddie says this isn't the end of the world. She can just reason with Hetson. He'll understand. But she tells him she tried and Hetson doesn't care. She declares that she's going to lose her scholarship. Clip 14.
Well, let's not get melodramatic.
Melodramatic?
I'm just saying, relax. You know, I think maybe you're having a little worst case scenario freak out here, maybe forgetting the bigger things at hand.
Oh, what exactly is bigger than my getting kicked out of college?
You see, you've already escalated from losing your scholarship to getting kicked out of school. You just take all this stuff way too seriously.
Oh, and I guess what I'm learning about you is that you don't take anything seriously.
No, I just try to pay attention to the things that matter.
Like setting an alarm, for instance, is something I bet Eddie knows how to do.
Yeah. I mean, also, oh my God, whatever. Like, I was not a scholarship student, so I'm not going to say what certain scholarships require or don't.
Same.
Like, if she were an athlete with a scholarship role, there is a certain, like, grade floor, but that's your total GPA. We're told all the time she's a straight A student and perfect. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think, as a sophomore, that, like, a D from a professor everyone else at Worthington has to know is a bad actor.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's going to trigger anything.
No.
And also, I hope it does. I don't care. Hate.
Yeah.
Her.
I mean, all she really would have to do is, like, go to the head of the department and be like, this is retributive, and this professor has had it in for me the first week of school when he read an email that I accidentally mass sent to everyone, like, critiqued it in front of our whole class. Mm-hmm. Like, anyway.
Yeah.
Joey doesn't take the things that matter line as a dig, ranting on clip 15.
And what matters to you, Eddie? Because to me, Worthington is kind of a ride out of a previously lacking existence. You know, I don't know what your dreams are, so I don't know how to explain it to you. But, you know, come to think of it, I don't really know anything about you at all.
Well, I don't know. You're usually pretty good at assuming things about me.
Yeah. Everything I think about you, I've pretty much strung together through flimsy assumptions.
Yeah, well, maybe your powers of deduction are particularly strong.
You know what? Maybe I should have just stuck to my original pattern.
Fucking a guy and then picking a fight with him hours later is your usual pattern, actually.
Mm-hmm. 100% is. Also, maybe you don't know really anything about him because you are self-absorbed and don't listen.
Anyway, there's more. Clip 16.
Oh, yeah, because that was making you so happy.
Well, at least I knew what I was getting myself into. Everything new I try just seems to backfire.
That's how people grow up, Joe. They learn from their mistakes.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm learning is that avoiding Joey Potter's path less taken is probably the smarter way to go.
Look, I'm sorry you missed your test. But I don't want what happened last night to be a mistake to you. But I guess it was.
It was this morning.
Yeah.
A. B, avoiding Joey Potter's path less taken. I just had a stroke. That was like a sextuple negative, and it doesn't work. That's B. C, yes, Eddie, it was a mistake.
Uh-huh.
For you. Now that sweeps are over, walk to the edge of Worcester.
Yeah.
Stick out your thumb and get out of the fucking bloodline.
Honest to God.
You can do it.
It's not over yet. Joey has just delivered dishes to a table when she turns around and sees Hetson sitting alone. Putting on her most furious face, she asks to take his order. Clip 17.
I'll take a burger and a beer. A Guinness, please. And I'd like a pickle also, please. And a glass of water, if you don't mind, with ice.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
How can you sit there and order for me and pretend like nothing happened? Why are you even here? Are you trying to torture me? Is that it?
Oh, first of all, that was like four questions. But no matter. The answer to your first question, how can I just sit here and order from you like nothing happened, is twofold. A, from my perspective, not much really did happen. And B, I'm hungry. It didn't even occur to me that it had anything to do with you.
No, just my paltry little life would just come crashing down all around me thanks to you.
Thanks to who now? Okay, wait, Joey. You know what? I changed my mind. I don't want french fries. I really feel like onion rings.
Well, you don't look like onion rings. But also, I mean, this whole character is a hateful contrivance, but I'm not enjoying this.
Nope.
Shrug emoji.
She's such a pill. She deserves all of this and more. Ugh.
Biggest,
anyway.
Chalkiest pill in the whole pharmacy. Worst.
Eddie, who has been eavesdropping on most of this, comes over to Hetson after Joey has stormed off. Hetson guesses Eddie is the knight in shining armor and Hetson himself is the dragon in this little play. Eddie ignores that and tells him to give Joey another chance since Eddie is the one who made her late. Ooh, mistake. Clip 18.
Look, Eddie, if that even is your real name, I don't care. I don't care how much you studied. I don't care how sorry she is. I don't care how great the sex was. You're wasting your breath, kid. Go get a kitten out of a tree or something.
What is your problem, man? I mean, can't you try to be human for once?
Tell me, just where do you think this little relationship with you and Joey is going anyway?
I really don't think that's any of your business.
Because, you know, I have an idea. And believe me, it's not going to be a pretty picture. Ms. Potter is, well, her performance on today's exam notwithstanding, a gal who's going places, as they say. Places that you will not be going in. Places you can never hope to go. I mean, don't tell me it doesn't make you just a little crazy knowing that she's actually got the life that you tried to fake for yourself. I mean, who knows? Maybe you lured her to your apartment on purpose, right? Trying to level the playing field, maybe? Not gonna work though, Eddie. She'll still see right through you. She'll still leave, and you'll still be trapped right here. You know, it's a really good thing you look so cute in that little apron of yours, because the.
Okay, relax, extra Jesus. Oh my God!
Oh my God! So, yeah. Maybe she was reacting to the fact that only in movies and on TV are bullies this florid.
Yeah.
About it, and kind of only in movies and on TV does anyone keep listening to them after, like, the first clause.
Uh-huh.
Like, are we really doing this, like, 80s class divide, Steph in Pretty in Pink shit?
Mm-hmm.
Just go to the other end of the bar and see if anyone needs anything.
Yeah.
Or tell security to get rid of him. Like, what are we doing? Why is he here?
if this is what Hudson thinks of Joey, is him not giving her grace on this exam, his way of leveling the playing field to, like, you know, knock her down and let her prove to him that she can rise above or some bullshit. Like, I mean, at least he, unlike Wilder from the last season, hasn't been acting all semester like she's the future of American letters or whatever the fuck.
Mm-hmm.
But I also didn't think he really thought she was a particularly good or intelligent student either. So all of this is very strange.
Yeah. She was an easy target. He likes making fun of people. She walks right into his traps every single fucking time. She did it like 5 times just in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Joey comes out to witness the end of this, giving Eddie a faint but noticeable smile of approval as he stalks past her. And then she puts her big mad face back on to drop Hudson's order on his table. That'll show him. At least she probably spat in all of it. So, you know, that's something. When we see Eddie next, he is coming out the front door of Hell's Kitchen to see Joey sitting on the hood of his car, which is improbably parked right in front of the bar. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he has just been fired, but Hudson agreed not to sue. Joey starts babbling apologies, but Eddie understands, and he's also sorry for calling her melodramatic before. She admits she tends to escalate things, whereas Eddie tends to downplay them. Somewhere in the middle, something about them still makes sense, she feels. Clip 19.
And if I hadn't overslept and messed things up with Hudson, I never would have seen this new side of you.
This side of him could not be more predictable, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not new, it's old. And also, clearly why she likes him, because it's the side that he has in common with Pacey. She had a rocky start on the Potter road less traveled. Stop branding it. Stop referring to yourself in the third person. But she's happy where she is, adding that he had a nice right hook and calling him Slugger, getting a kiss for it because he kind of liked it. And when she leans her head on his shoulder, he says he has an idea for something they could do to take their minds off all this and know it's not sex. When they hop down from the hood, he twirls her again like he did in the last episode, which is like, don't make this their thing.
No.
And then when we see them again, they're standing in the dark while Eddie works a control panel, turning on the stereo and the lights. And then they're scuffling around on the ice at the stadium where Eddie's dad works, I guess, and who apparently very off-screenily got them in again. And as they mess around in their figure skates, Joey says Eddie does have a kind of masculine grace. And she thanks Eddie, and he says it's his pleasure. Just a reminder, behind this dumb moment is her stupid ass is the reason he's unemployed at Christmas time. But, you know, enjoy. Mm-hmm. Happy holidays.
Yeah. Okay. Like, if I were like, oh, I have an idea of something fun we could do to take our minds off it and it's not sex. And I'd be like, it's not? You want me to put skates on and freeze my ass? Fuck you.
It's 4 in the morning. I don't know. What time do bars close in Boston? I don't even know.
No. Drive me to Worcester, strip, and let's forget this day.
All right, let's close it up by naming our MVP. I gotta say, Eddie Cahill is really funny to me.
Yeah, he is very funny, but I'm gonna say Todd, who is a mensch.
Yep, word.
And that give me 2 whiskeys and also get Dawson what he wants line. I'm a simple woman with simple pleasures.
Least valuable player. Joey, everything is your own fault. Stop being such a bitch.
Yeah. Josephine Potter, road less traveled or not, set an alarm, set another one.
Yep.
You're an idiot. Next time and again with this. They'll be home for Christmas. You can count on Ish. Dawson sulks about Natasha and Max. Gail seethes at drunk Todd. Eddie fights with Mike Potter. Doug judges big shot Pacey. And Audrey spirals even further down. But you can give yourself the gift of our visual aids. We do them for every episode of the Again With This podcast, and you'll find them, along with the full archive of episodes themselves, at the website that's againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Killer Take Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is real actress Tara Ariano. Note, I do not consult with her on these outros. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano, and our producer David T. Cole doesn't look like onion rings. Talk to you next time.
You know, I happen to possess a certain masculine grace.
No!
And cut!
Well done. I don't know what that was, but I liked it.